Max Verstappen claims his fourth world championship, and you're listening to the Forecast F1 podcast, and I'm being joined again by Samantha. Thank you for joining me again, Samantha. I don't know why you would want to skip a race like Brazil.
Oh my goodness. Of all races to miss for the podcast, let it be probably the best race in the entire year. But needless to say, I'm glad to be back, and especially glad to be back considering the fact that, yes, we did crown a four-time world champion this weekend.
And for the second time in a row, we're being joined by a guest from South Africa. Chelsea, it's great to finally have you on the podcast.
And it's great to be here. I'm very excited.
Quick question. Do you remember when you first started playing Forecast?
I'm pretty sure I was one of, like, the first. I think when I started, you had about 300 to 400 people playing. I've been with you ever since. It's been one of my highlights of my race weeks. I always make sure that I get my submission in time. I know I've had one or two times where I've been late, and one time since I started that I didn't submit due to life happening. But I'm very excited to play your game each week, even though I'm doing atrociously this season.
Well, actually, when you started, we even had fewer players than that. When you first started, we had only 213 players, and that was for this Singapore Grand Prix in 2022. Yeah. You know what's funny about that? That's also the first race that Sam ever predicted.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, aww. Yeah, it was a very long time ago.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm glad to know that Sam, you and I have been on this journey together.
We really have. I mean, it's been a long time, and like I said, I mean, for being a part of Forecast F1 for so long, it's so great to finally have you on the podcast and also to hear your thoughts.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm a bit like scared to see how many toes I'm going to step on, but let's see.
It's okay.
I'm actually trying to track who won out of the two of you that weekend, but that's taking me a bit longer than I thought it would. But great to have you on both. And I think we have quite a lot of things to talk about for this weekend. We had a lot of things happening. But before we go into the weekend, I think with the little pause that we had between Brazil and Las Vegas, there was some other news that we could talk about. First of all, I think most importantly, is that a new driver was announced for the 2025 season. So we know that both Bottas and Joe are not going to continue in Sauber, Stake, what is going to be Audi. We already knew that Hülkenberg is going that way, but we now also know that Bortoleto is joining him in the other seat. So what do we think about that?
I think it'll be interesting. We see a situation now for this driver pairing where we haven't really seen, obviously, his action in an F1 car. So kind of blind in a sense, but I think that also given his success previously, I'm looking forward to seeing what he makes out of the team and what he does. For Bottas, I'm surprised. I'm a little bit surprised that there isn't anything else in the future for him, at least for the 2025 season. But, I mean, he did get a tattoo on his leg saying what's next recently. So who knows right. Where he goes.
Yeah, no, I agree with Sam. It's definitely going in blind. And I always am so apprehensive about these drivers that come with this huge success story before they get to F1. Because once they get to F1, they either fall right into place or the wheels just fall off. So also let's see how he does in his first season next year. And he's going to have Hülkenberg as his teammate, so I'm sure he's going to have a lot of knowledge to share with him, and let's see.
Well, before going into the next thing, just to get back at what I was previously saying, so in that Singapore 2022 weekend, Chelsea, you scored 27 points, finishing 60th, and Sam, you only scored 12 points, finishing 189th.
Ouch.
But we'll see if you've gotten back at Chelsea for this race weekend. That goes on a little bit later.
Small victories. First,
yeah, well, first, Alpine announcing that they are going to race with a Mercedes engine starting from the 2026 season. Is that logical? I don't think it is at first sight, but is that a good move, Sam, for Alpine?
I think time will ultimately tell. I think right now we've seen over the last year that Alpine has been in quite a significant shift in terms of management, in terms of overall pretty much everywhere. So, I mean, with that being said, they haven't had, for the most part this season, really great success up until the last bit of the season with Gasly and Ocon recently in the last race. And even with Gasly, of course, we'll get into it, but with his brief stint during this weekend. So I think it's really up in the air. I mean, I am looking forward to seeing all these changes that Alpine is doing, because I'm hoping that it will produce a better result. But yeah, we'll really have to see ultimately how it shakes up.
And Chelsea, we heard that Monaco has extended its contract until 2031. How do you feel about that?
I mean, Monaco is always an exciting and just nostalgic racetrack. Obviously, there's a lot of pros and cons to it. It is a very constrictive racetrack at the same time, and it doesn't allow for a lot of, you know, fun overtakes. And it often comes down to, obviously, pitting first and qualifying. So it's both positive and also negative, because you sort of want some sort of change as well.
Yeah, you're right. I think, if I remember correctly, once you made a reel, actually, for the Forecast F1 Instagram page.
I was going to mention that.
Of Monaco, yeah.
Yes. And one of the things I highlighted was how hard it is to overtake on this track. And
yes,
just, you know,
right,
obviously
right.
Every year the car is getting wider and the track stays the same. So it's just sort of like, oh, come on, these cars are getting too big.
Good point. Well, I think, actually, for the new regulations, I think for 26 they're supposed to reduce slightly in size, but we'll see. I think there's still a very fair point that you're making, is that the cars are very big, and I don't know. I think I agree with you. It's a great place to go to, and it's a great race to have on the calendar. But then again, the Saturday is usually more exciting than the Sunday. Talking about the Saturday being more exciting than the Sunday, of course that's the case for Las Vegas as well, because the race was on the Saturday, at least at local time. I think for all of us it was technically on the Sunday. Before we actually get to the free practice sessions, someone that was almost not even able to get to those free practice sessions was Yuki Tsunoda. It was a bit tough for him entering the United States.
I did not know that. What happened?
That's true. Poor Yuki. And in true Yuki fashion, well, I think Yuki had a little bit of an issue at the border. However, he did mention that I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Anton, that he thought that maybe part of the reason why, jokingly, was because he was wearing his pajamas to get in, which honestly, it's so on brand for Yuki, which is pretty funny.
I was just thinking, it's pretty easy to fact check if somebody is part of the F1 circuit, isn't it? I mean, if you claim to be an F1 racing driver, I mean, there's just about, you know, there's just 20 of them on the current grid. So
yeah,
I was just surprised that it took them 2 hours.
Yeah.
That sounds like quite a headache. And I wonder if Yuki's going to, I don't know, complain, something of the sorts, because that doesn't sound like it was a fun 2 hours.
I think he took it quite well, to be honest. And I think, in the end, I think Yuki's aim is at something else right now, which is getting that other Red Bull seat. But we'll get to that in a little bit, because, he had a pretty decent weekend. But anyway, let's start at the beginning of the weekend, which was the Thursday, with two free practice sessions. And as we already knew beforehand, the Las Vegas Grand Prix being moved a little bit further ahead in the calendar meant that temperatures would be even colder than they were the year previously. And I think that was one of the most interesting factors going into this this whole weekend, just to see how that would affect all the different teams. We saw in the free practice sessions, on the first two ones already, that Red Bull was struggling with not really having a super low downforce rear wing set up. They were just good in turn 5 and turn 12, where you need a lot of downforce. But on the straight lines, they were not quick, and they were struggling. And I think summarizing the three FP1, 2, and 3 sessions, I think most notable was that Mercedes was super quick, which actually they have been on colder track temperatures throughout this year. So in that respect, not the largest surprise, perhaps, but I think altogether it was a bit of a surprise. I don't think anybody, well, and actually looking at all three of our predictions this weekend, that's not really what any of us expected this weekend.
No, not at all. I mean, it's definitely plays a huge factor, being the temperatures, the degradation, and yes, ultimately, I don't think my picks reflected that. So it's a little comforting to know that everyone else's was as well.
Yeah, well, that's going to be a huge topic later on this podcast. But
Can't wait.
Of those cold temperatures, also for neither can I, Sam. It was actually funny, it was kind of interesting to not have you on the very podcast, which was the race where you turned out to be second in the worldwide standings for Forecast F1. That has never ever happened before, and you happened to miss that race.
Yeah, it truly was the weekend to miss of all weekends. And yes, just as a little side note, I guess, a funny side note to that, Anton had asked me to make sure to listen to the podcast right away. And I was, of course, going to do it as soon as possible. But when I was listening to it was while I was in a grocery store, and I had to stop in the aisle and go back and replay it three times because I didn't actually realize that when he said Sam, he meant me. In second, I didn't even know how that happened. So yeah, I think Anton had quite a few voice memos from me, not just because of the second place, but also for the fact of my whole breakdown of watching the race play by play, since I wasn't available during the podcast.
Yeah, well, let's do a follow-up on that a little bit later on. But
sure.
Going back to the cold tire temperatures, so in order for the teams for the drivers to set good quali laps, turned out that in qualifying they had to do a double warm-up lap, basically preparing two laps, which meant that during all sessions we had cars on the track at all times. And in that Q1 session, I think, first on the positive notes, I think it was interesting to see that Joe actually made it through, Bottas did not. I think he actually gave him a tow because Bottas knew that he would have a grip penalty. And also Colapinto made it through, where Albon did not. Haas went on a slightly different strategy, not setting banker laps, but just going out for that last set of preparation laps and just one flyer, both making it through. Stroll did the same thing but did not make it through. But I think most notable was Sergio Perez stranding on that P16, wasn't it?
Oh, it's just terrible, especially when you think about where Perez started. I always, you know, take practice very apprehensively because some teams really just don't hold back, and they really open up their what their car can do and what they can do in the car, and other teams, you know, sort of play it cool and try not to show the other teams what they've got. So I always, you know, hope for the best when I see practice results and when I watch practice, because I always just want to think like, okay, they're playing like a strategic move here. They're trying to show that they don't have the power. But we've just been watching Perez's very slow decline, and just it's just been heartbreaking to watch. And I'm really interested to see who Red Bull gives that second seat to.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say, like, here's a question, actually, since we're talking about that. And Chelsea, I'd love to hear your thoughts. Like, when it comes to the driver pairing for next year, and let's say the second seat is up for grabs, which we all pretty much would think so at this point, who do you think are some drivers that you would say would maybe be a good fit in that second driver seat for Red Bull?
Oh, I only have one driver. This is a short list. Liam Lawson.
Okay.
Think that he has proven that he can do something with that Red Bull. And I really hope that he gets a seat. I know that that Anton mentioned Yuki a little bit earlier. I don't see Yuki as the second seat for Red Bull, and I know that it will absolutely crush Yuki. And on a very personal note, obviously I really want him to get it, but just strategically, and you know who's got the power of the car, I just think that Liam is first choice and only choice in my books. But please let me hear your input on this.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it a few times. Anton, what about you?
No, I think it's between the two of them, and I personally would like to see Yuki simply because I think it would just be a great watch to see what he could do in that Red Bull. But purely thinking out of the perspective of Red Bull, I would completely understand if they would go for Liam. So in that sense, I'll be fine with either one, which would make it interesting who's going to fill up the other seat in V-Carp, or I think next year they're going to be called only Racing Bulls. But that would be very interesting. I think one candidate for that Racing Bull seat would be Colapinto. But moving back to the qualifying session, in that Q2 session, he crashed out pretty badly, didn't he?
Oh, that was a terrible crash.
Costing his team a pretty penny.
Yeah. Yeah, Williams has a very expensive season this year with all the crashes that they've sustained, that's for sure. I think that, you know, first and foremost, it's very good that he made it out fine and was cleared medically. However, at the same time, I mean, you could see that concrete wall actually was shifted because of the impact.
Yeah, I don't think it was concrete, otherwise it wouldn't have shifted. But
concrete. It's early in the morning.
But it was
Sam.
It was a heavy impact. Yeah, good point. It is early in the morning, so Chelsea. Did you watch the race live? I suppose you did.
I watched it just after live. I had, you know, my plans that I had this morning, and I only got back home at around 2 o'clock my time, and the race was already like happening. So I got into it, I think maybe the race was already 30 laps in when I started watching, so I was just slightly behind live.
Right, so Chelsea is South African, but she lives in Malaysia, so that explains the time difference. So, and for me and Sam, it was, well, for me it was 2 o'clock in the morning, Sam, for you it was 1 o'clock in the morning, so we both watched it just now. We're just getting right out of it, so we're still very much in the heat of the moment. But it was a pretty heavy crash from Colapinto. Didn't look nice, and I sort of feel bad for him, because other than that, you know, his weekend was going pretty nice with him out qualifying Albon in the Q1 session. So been unfortunate for him to crash. He would have started P14 but had to start from the pit lane, and I guess the Williams mechanics were not really quite pleased with what they saw, because it's been a trend this season, not just because of Colapinto. Also, Albon has had his fair amount of crashes, and of course Logan Sargeant did too, so it's been a lot of work for them. But I think the other drivers that made it into Q3, that did make it into Q3, that are worthy of a mention are Tsunoda, Gasly and Hülkenberg. And I think an interesting Q3 session with, I think, well, of course, the highlight being George Russell taking pole. The other highlight, Lewis Hamilton not being able to set a competitive lap. And that was really a shame, because actually, if you look at Hamilton's lap times for Q2, his fastest time in Q2 would have actually been good enough for P3 in Q3. He set at 1:32.567, which would be would have put him just between Sainz and Gasly. And I think with Gasly, we're mentioning the other driver that we should talk about here, because that was an amazing qualifying for Pierre Gasly, wasn't it? And I think it's been a good set of weekends for him recently.
I mean, I have a question for you. How many people actually got his prediction right? How many people predicted that he would be in P3?
Well, of course, the predictions are for the race, not for qualifying.
No, but of course, yes. But I mean, P3, it was quite like, obviously, if his engine didn't have the issues that it did have today, I mean, it could have been a very different race for him and a very different, you know, top 10 position. So I'm just so interested to know if anybody had him in the top five, because it was, to me, it was a huge shock, a huge surprise, and just like, go Gasly, go.
Okay, well, in the meantime, I will go and figure that out for you. And why don't the two of you mention a few other of the highlights from qualifying that I sort of passed on?
Sure. I mean, I would say definitely the Gasly result was probably the most, one of the most surprising or best pleasant surprises that we could have for qualifying, and especially coming off the backs of the last race finishing on the podium. I think that the pace in the Alpine, especially on the straights, you can really see how they were able to maximize that, and how obviously the Vegas track itself catered to this. And so even Ocon, he narrowly missed going into Q3 as well. But overall, a very great result for Gasly when it came to qualifying. I would say a few other surprises, Chelsea, we can talk about is the McLarens, like the fact that we did not see them up at the top of the grid. We, in fact, saw them struggling quite a bit.
I mean, it was, it's been the turn I've been waiting for this whole season. The season has been incredibly tough for me. Obviously, I've become very comfortable. Max actually mentioned it in one of his interviews post Las Vegas race, where he just said, you know, my fans have been quite comfortable with me last year, and now this year it's been a real fight. So it has been quite an uncomfortable season just as a whole, and it's been very uncomfortable watching how strong the McLarens are. So I can't say I've shed any tears. And I think that Norris is definitely worthy of a championship one day. But I'm just not ready to see it go to anybody else other than Max at this time. So I'm happy that they're having these car troubles. And I can't help but wonder, did it have anything to do with them changing their rear wing?
Ah, possibly. I think, you know what? I think if we look overall with McLaren this year, I mean, they have a lot of things that are great that puts them in a competitive position clearly, but then I think that they've also struggled in other areas that ultimately have cost them at least the ability to shorten the gap in the Drivers' Championship. And you know, whether that the performance of the car has been pretty consistent for the most part, but I think the strategy has definitely been an area, and the communication as well has definitely been an area of concern. And I think that those are probably the most prevalent issues that they have faced throughout the season that's kind of held them back. In this race in particular, I do think that they've struggled with pace. I don't necessarily know the ultimate reasons as to why, but it seems as though there are times where when this happens, the communication that comes back, at least from the drivers, is that they don't understand where the issue lies. Now, of course, maybe that is just them communicating that and that they're very well aware as to what it is. But it was surprising to definitely see them not as competitive as we are accustomed to recently. And, you know, one thing I would say as well that was a pleasant surprise in terms of pace was, of course, Mercedes, because yes, they have struggled as of recently and more consistently throughout the season. But yeah, to see them with the pace that they had, and ultimately with Russell securing pole, and even Hamilton, I know you had touched on that, Anton, was the fact that he finished in 10th. And that was a surprise, because yeah, on the timesheets, he was flying this weekend, and we're all well aware of his struggles that he has had in terms of the car, in terms of decisions that he has vocalized. But ultimately, with the exception of that one slip up at the end of Q3, I mean, he could have seen himself in a much better position. And ironically enough, it was kind of the same, similar, not exactly the same, but the same kind of idea as Brazil, because he made one slip up during his qualifying, which cost him as well. And in that case, obviously, it was much farther down the grid.
That's what it comes down to. It's really just one slip up and it can change a driver's whole race. But I will agree with you, Sam. I mean, Mercedes have been having fantastic pace throughout this whole weekend. Their car clearly does just really well in colder conditions. And they've orchestrated a really good low downforce setup. And that works perfectly on the Las Vegas track.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not very used to the invited guest giving me tasks, but I have completed mine. So let's go back to the Gasly question. I think it's a very interesting one. So how many, just to throw it back at you, Chelsea, how many people do you think put Gasly in their top five in their predictions this weekend? How many people out of, well, we were going to get to that later on, but there were 1,074 people playing the game. So I'll be curious to hear it from you.
Oh, gosh, I think it was like in the single to like low 10 digits, like probably like 5 to 17. That would be my guess.
Okay, well, I think you're. It seems like you're pretty good at this guessing game. So, Sam, just
heads up.
There's probably not. This is not. I was going to say saying in Dutch. I don't think it's one in English. But get your chest wet. But I don't think you say that in English. It probably sounds pretty weird. But anyway,
yeah, it does.
It was only six people that had Gasly in their top five. So there was actually only one person who had Gasly on P3, and there were five people who had him on P5. And then if we go further down, there were seven people who had him on P6. There were 23 who had him on P7. There were 115 who had him on P8. 171 who had him on 9. And 118 who had him on 10. Actually, interesting that more people had him on P9 than people who did have him on P10. And there was only one single person who had him on fastest lap too. So, there you have your answer.
Oh, thank you. There it is. Like I said, it was a complete shock. It was like, wow, where did he come from? Is this a turning point for Alpine? Like was mentioned earlier, they've just been having such a terrible season. And you mentioned them changing their engine to Mercedes for next season. I think that that would be a good move for them, because currently whatever they're doing isn't, you know, giving them the results that they need to see. While Mercedes might not be the strongest engine to try to take over, hopefully they can make magic with it.
I was very surprised to see them on the speed traps being the quickest one this weekend. I mean, we haven't seen anything like it during this whole season. So that was something that surprised me hugely. And it was, I guess, even though it was such a great qualifying session, it was such a shame to see what happened for Gasly during the race when his engine blew up. Because even though he was tumbling down the order, it would definitely be possible to have a points finish for him. But unfortunately that wasn't to be. But let's actually, now that I'm already mentioning, I don't know if you had anything else on qualifying, but if not, I would like to go and talk a little bit about the race. As we expected, most of the drivers were on medium tires, but we had Perez, Bottas and Colapinto starting on the alternative strategy, starting on the hards, and we had Alonso starting on the soft tire, which I think he would change after four or five laps or so. But let's start talking a little bit about the race, and let's start at the very beginning, at the race start. Sam, would you be able to give a small summary of that?
Sure. I mean, we'll start with the fact that obviously you had mentioned where everybody was positioned. And at the beginning, I would say that it was interesting. We saw Russell obviously get ahead. We also saw a few situations with Ferrari. Leclerc made a pretty strong advance at the very beginning. And we also saw what I thought was really thrilling, and it kind of carried throughout the first, I would say, third of the race, was the battle between Lawson and Magnussen, which started at the very beginning of the race. I thought that was pretty exciting because they were going wheel to wheel in some pretty some pretty aggressive spots, let's say.
Magnussen race any other way? Oh, sorry.
Sorry?
I said, does Magnussen race any other way?
Very true. And I think we're seeing that with Lawson too, right? I mean, he's been making some bold moves since he joined F1. So I actually thought it was really thrilling to see these two drivers with the styles that they have that we know, and watching them go wheel to wheel on a track like Vegas. It was very exciting.
Yeah, I think it was a very good start of Leclerc. I think he was actually helped quite a bit by Sainz, because Sainz was basically blocking off Gasly to make a move, and by doing so he kept quite a bit of space on the inside, which Leclerc was able to make use of. So for the Ferraris, it was a good start of the race, and for the remainder of the race it would be a good fight between the Ferraris too, where at times they would work together, at times they wouldn't, and at times also the pit crew wouldn't really work together with Sainz. That was a very interesting situation where he had to tell them to wake up, because they were, I think they were just so much focused on the switch between Sainz and Leclerc, where they had like completely forgotten that Sainz was already asking for a pit stop for like two laps or so. I mean, we never really know exactly when the radio message has been coming in and when, whether they have been delayed by a lot, but I think Sainz had been asking for that. Anyway, it was Sainz behind the wheel who was making his own strategy again, switching between plan A and plan C, telling the mechanics what to do. But I think it was, I don't know exactly which lap it was, but it was Hamilton and Sainz basically both going into the pit lane, but then Sainz making a last minute decision, probably informed by his engineer that the pit crew wasn't ready. So he lost about 4 seconds to Leclerc at that point, which obviously he also lost towards Hamilton. He later, I think one lap later, he pitted anyway. He lost a lot of time to Hamilton that way. And I think we saw a graphic later on in the race too, where they show that if he would have pitted one lap earlier and thus not lost the time of going slow in the pit lane, but also wouldn't have stayed out on the more degraded tire for longer, he would have been ahead of Hamilton. If he would have really finished ahead of Hamilton, I strongly doubt, because as we saw towards the end of the race, it was Hamilton who was basically doing what Verstappen was doing in Brazil. It was throwing out one fastest lap after the other. Of course, in the end, he didn't pick up that point because Norris had a 22-second gap to Piastri and was able to make that free pit stop and get that fastest lap. But it was definitely Hamilton who was the fastest driver on track at the latter part of the race. And he also claimed driver of the day. And I think that was fully deserved, going from P10 to P2. And it really confirmed what we had already seen in the previous sessions and all the free practice sessions, but also the qualifying session, how strong Mercedes really was this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, I completely agree. It seems to be a theme for Sainz that he constantly has to make his own strategic plans while in the mix of the race. I feel really bad for him, and I can only imagine his frustration with that whole pit stop fiasco. He was clearly asking for it. I don't know if it was neglect, a mistake, a choice. I mean, I'm not sure what's going on with Ferrari and Sainz, because it really does seem to be a theme of the entire season. And I agree with you. He would have come out in P2, but would he have kept it? I don't think he would have been able to keep it. Hamilton was on a hunt today, and he was fighting for his position. I actually wrote on like lap 16, I said Hamilton fighting driver of the day ? So I was already thinking like by lap 16 that this is driver of the day material.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more.
Nice. Well, that tells the story. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, for him as well, I think that it's probably a little bit, I imagine that he wants to go out on a high note with Mercedes in any capacity that he can. So this is definitely, considering we only have two races left on the calendar, something that he can put a little feather in his cap, I guess, so to speak.
Yes, and of course, especially with Toto coming out and claiming that, you know, they were going to get rid of Hamilton anyway, maybe not in such harsh words, but I mean, he definitely did make it seem like his idea was that Hamilton was already out the door before Hamilton signed with Ferrari. So I'm sure that also set a fire under Hamilton, just to show that he's not washed up. He might be older than most of the grid, but he's still got that fight in him.
Yeah. And, you know, we see that from other drivers as well. I mean, last year, look at the success that Alonso had. And so, I mean, he's the oldest driver on the grid, and he can still perform. And for at least this year hasn't been so successful for him. But I think that we've seen that with some of the veteran drivers, just the fact that they are able to maintain it. And I don't think that it's easy, because you're probably under an even more insurmountable pressure, just given the fact of the talent, the caliber of talent that's coming out of rookie drivers. And I think that it's also really interesting because it diversifies the grid, where we see new drivers that are actually able to join. But at the same time, for drivers like Hamilton, for drivers like Alonso, or any others that have been here for a little while, I think there's a lot of pressure on them to be able to perform because of that.
I mean, it's interesting you mentioned that, Sam, because F1 used to be majority older men driving. It was an older man's sport. And over the years, they've obviously gotten younger and younger drivers due to, you know, the upgrades on the cars, the more buttons, you know, obviously that works better with the younger generation. But F1 used to be an older man's sport. The drivers used to be 30, 40 years old and going strong. So it's definitely interesting to see how even in the new age, the older drivers can still definitely hold their own in it. And when they have a decent car, they can do some damage like Alonso did last season. Unfortunately, I'm not sure what's going on with the Aston car this year, but because we can also see that Alonso isn't doing as well as he did last season, but he's definitely doing better than his teammates.
Yes, I agree, and it's great actually to see that young drivers are getting it, because you're completely right. Like, if you look at the history of the sport, there were a lot of older drivers, and then we moved further and further ahead to having young drivers. Of course, there's a couple of good examples. There's Lance Stroll as another example, and but you know, it's actually good that since we didn't have any new drivers on the grid between previous year and this year, but it seems that for next year we are going to get a lot of rookies again. I mean, we're going to get Antonelli, we're going to get Jack Doohan, we're going to get Bartoletto. Of course, Bierman has had a couple of races, but he's coming in. I suppose that Lawson definitely has a seat for next year too. So it's actually good to see that so many young drivers are getting a chance. And it's not that I want to replace the old guys. I mean, I hope Alonso continues for a couple of more years. I'd love to see him on the grid. But all in all, it's good to see that teams are not afraid to give younger drivers a chance. And of course, the prime example has always been set by Verstappen coming in when he was still 17 and now claiming his fourth title. I already mentioned it in the introduction, but I think it's fair to give it a bit of attention. And of course, for himself, he was driving a race where he was obviously just, he had to finish, or he had to make sure that Norris didn't score 3 points more than he did. So I think his race was managed in such a way that he didn't have to fight the Ferraris very hard. He just had to make sure that Norris didn't pass him, and I think that wasn't a tough job today. And thereby finishing, I don't want to say in style. Of course, his title deciding races have always been kind of interesting. Last year we saw it during the Qatar sprint race, then the year before that it was during a lot of confusion in the Japanese Grand Prix with the weather conditions and many people not really realizing whether we would get full points, yes or no. And then of course the year before that we had Abu Dhabi, but this was perhaps not the most dramatic way to do it, with a fifth position finish, but then again, pretty nice place to do it, being in Las Vegas. I guess he definitely preferred that to doing it 1 week later, which would have been Qatar, which probably would have been the sprint race then again. So not a bad place to be crowned as a world champion.
Definitely not a bad place for him to finish at all. And now he's joined an elite few that have managed to secure their driver's championship title in fifth place at the Las Vegas Strip. So I think it's quite an iconic way to finish this championship, especially considering how difficult the season was. And now Max's name is alongside KK Rosberg and Nelson Piquet.
Yeah, I completely agree with you.
I'm just trying to figure out. So you're saying that Piquet and Rosberg also finished fifth
so
in
Nelson
Las Vegas
Piquet? Yes. So not fifth. So Nelson Piquet in 1981 finished fifth and won his his driver's world championship. And in 1982, KK Rosberg also finished fifth and won his driver's world championship at the Las Vegas Strip as well.
I'm checking it while you're speaking, but you're right. I didn't realize that. That's a pretty amazing stat.
What are the odds?
I think so too. And like I said, it's iconic for Max. Do, 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 do.
Nice. Yeah. Sam, how did you summarize Verstappen's season? Because of course it's not the same way of winning a title as it was last year, where he simply dominated the whole season. It was quite a different season in that regard. So how do you look at that?
I really believe that this season was one of the best seasons that obviously fourth time that he's driver champion, but I think this is probably one of the best ones to cement just the skill that he has as a driver, because there's been several tracks, there's been several races in general where he's really had to flex that skill. And you're seeing more so the quality of him as a driver, as opposed to, not just the strength of the car or the team itself. So, for example, if you go back to the race last our last race, which in my opinion was probably one of his strongest races that he's ever had, because it leveled the playing field when it came to an environment factor. I mean, the rain always, for the most part, in situations like that, it really levels the playing field, because the cars themselves, the pace of the vehicles aren't necessarily your strong suit at that point. It really ultimately comes down to the strength of the driver and the ability to weather the conditions. And to see his performance and to be able to secure a win in the way that he did it, and the overtakes that he did, and the timing that he did, and the confidence in the car, and, you know, so on and so forth, you really couldn't argue the strength of him as a driver in that race alone. And I think that we've seen several examples of that over this season. We've seen a season for Red Bull itself where previous to this, they were, like you said, Anton, they dominated the season previous. I mean, it was just, they were ahead of everybody. And now we've seen a season where I wouldn't necessarily say that you look at McLaren as just the strongest team that's in competition with them. I mean, you look at this race, you look at so many races on the calendar this year, and ultimately it's been a thrilling season overall because of the fact that you go into a race not knowing who ultimately could take the top of the podium. We've seen strength on some weekends with Ferrari. We've seen strength with McLaren, and obviously this weekend, Mercedes. So I think that also adds more depth overall to a calendar where it makes it more challenging for a driver like Max. And although this race, yes, maybe he finishes fifth and he doesn't necessarily win the race, I think that overall you can look back over this calendar and really think that he deserved it nonetheless, because even when the team wasn't at its strongest, he was able to overperform in the car, resulting in ultimately his fourth world title. So yeah, definitely deserved.
I completely agree, Sam. And I love how you mentioned, you know, just the team as a whole, because if you just compare Max to Perez's, you know, positions throughout the whole season, you need to ask yourself, how much is it the car and how much is it the driver? And I think when we compare those two drivers, you can really see that Max has had to fight for it this season. Clearly the car isn't up to standards as per his competitors, but he's really put in the work. And Brazil was just a fantastic race to see him really show his skills and his talent.
Yeah, I agree. That last race in Brazil, or that last win in Brazil for Verstappen, sort of still puts a little bit of a cherry on the season that he had, and gives us the feeling that it was not just defending in the second part, but he actually was able to still take a win. And continuing a little bit on the stats that you mentioned, Chelsea, what I also think is interesting, that this is the first F1 season where we have 7 different drivers who've won multiple races. And of course, we do have a lot more races than we used to have on the calendar, but still, it's a pretty amazing stat that all the drivers from the 4 quickest teams, except for Sergio Perez, have won at least 2 races. And I think this one for George Russell must have felt a lot better than the previous one this season in Austria, where he basically, of course, he had to be there at that third place, but it was because of the crash between Verstappen and Norris. Of course, he was able to take that victory. But I think this one must feel about as good as the one in Brazil a couple of years ago when he took his first win. And I suppose, yeah, I guess this was a little bit similar, because during that season too, Mercedes weren't very strong and it was a bit of an outlier. And I think this was also, of course, if we look at the whole season and the races that Mercedes won, I already mentioned the one in Austria, but of course the ones that Hamilton won, the one in Silverstone, was of course also heavily affected by weather conditions and making very good strategy calls. But I still wonder if Piastri would have won that race, or Norris would have, if McLaren would have made some quicker decisions. And of course he won the one in Belgium where Russell was disqualified. All in all, the way I look at it is that Mercedes was probably the fourth quickest team this year, but this race weekend they really, really dominated, and that must give them a lot of good hopes for next year, because, well, of course Verstappen already had this advantage that he had given himself at the beginning of the season, but we're going to start back at zero next year, and it's going to be, I mean, I don't know how you feel about it, but it has to be a very interesting season. And you know, if the races are going to take course in the same way as they do now, where, like you were saying, I mean, we really have no idea ahead of the weekend who's going to take it. I mean, I'm just, I don't know, I'm just super excited for next year.
It is very exciting, and especially just the diversity in the winners we've had this season, especially considering, you know, the last couple of years. It was a dominant Lewis season, then it was a dominant Max season, and so on. So it's just to see, you know, that Ferrari got a chance, McLaren got a chance, Mercedes got a chance, even Alpine got a chance to you know, have some glory. It's just been a very exciting season as a whole, just to see everybody have a chance and just to really see who's going to be the winner out of all of these phenomenal drivers.
All right, so before we end this recap of the race and the weekend itself, was there any other things that you guys would want to mention that happened over this weekend?
For me, it would have to be the trash, the litter that was left on the track today in today's race. I was really blown away by the fact that they couldn't just pick it up. They knew before the race even started that a fan had thrown the trash onto the track, and yet nobody thought, let's quickly pick it up, and that it ended up costing poor Albon's race, because he ended up getting some of that trash into his engine. So I'm very confused as to why they wouldn't just pick it up and let the race start. So yeah, please tell me your thoughts on this.
No, I completely agree. I mean, we've seen several examples of anything. I mean, these cars themselves, to even have that as a risk can be a significant risk in many, many different ways, not even just in a race result, but the car itself and the driver itself. So I'm baffled, just as you are, as I'm sure many people would be, as to why you would not ensure that anything is clear on the track for the most important reason alone, and that's the safety itself.
Yeah, and it's surprising that we see it actually in Las Vegas of all places, in terms of, I think if you would, I mean, organization wise it's also the, well, let's just say Monaco is the crown jewel of Formula One, but I guess of FOM organizing this race by themselves and them wanting this to come out really well in the pictures, it's I don't know, it's a bit confusing to see it happening here. And you mentioned Albon, we saw a piece of plastic also attached to the floor of one of the Mercedes, I think it was Russell, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, it's not a pretty picture. You wouldn't want to see that. And I'm just surprised it happens over here, and in a multi-million dollar sport, it's just a tad confusing that such an element plays a role. So I would love to see that differently.
Yeah, it's very confusing, and it's for me it's very reminiscent of last year Las Vegas, where the manhole pops out underneath Sainz's right. car, yes. ruining his race, and nobody took accountability for it. It's like I kept trying to like search after the race to find out like is like F1 as a whole, the FIA, like they're going to pay Ferrari for this huge loss that they undertook because of a mistake that was not theirs. It was an actual fundamental construction mistake that they made on the track. And obviously, you know, the trash is very small in comparison, but still the damage can still be done. And like Sam mentioned, it's a safety concern.
Yeah, I completely agree.
All right. Well, I guess that means that we move along into the scores for this weekend. Very exciting. So, Anton, why don't you tell us, first of all, how many people played this weekend?
Well, for the listener that has been paying attention, I mentioned it when we were talking about the Gasly stats. So we had 1,074 people playing the game. And in order for us to decide who goes first later on, taking guesses at the quiz, I'm going to ask the two of you how many people you think predicted a correct podium in the correct order, with P1 Russell, P2 Hamilton, P3 Sainz.
Okay.
Oh gosh. I will say like 3.
I'm going to say a little more just because of the pace of Mercedes, so I'm going to go with 5.
All right. Well, really, Sam, you got to, I mean, get ready for the quiz, because Chelsea seems to be good at this. She's gotten closer. There was only one person who got this right, who had Russell Hamilton signs. There were a few more people who indeed had a 1-2 for Mercedes, but most of them went with a Leclerc or with another Norris P3. So only one person getting that right, and that person would also go on to win the weekend. But before that, wanted to mention the average score this weekend, which was only 27.5 points, pretty low. Lowest score being 4.25 points. And going to the podium of this year's Las Vegas race, I found it very, very interesting to find, again, Francesco Tanti on the podium, the only player from Malta in the game, who finished on the podium in Las Vegas in 2023 as well. He won the race. He was the shared winner back then. And he again makes it to the podium. It's the second time he's on the podium, and he's doing it at both Las Vegas races. So seems to be his specialty.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely the track for him, that's for sure.
Yeah, he scored 71.0 points. So, yeah, very well done, Francesco. And just as getting a Mercedes 1-2, we had in forecast a Filipino 1-2 this weekend. So we had two players from the Philippines finishing on P2 and P1. Emmanuel Baldos finishing on P2 with 73 points. And Jasmine Gillian, who was the only person to get the podium in the right order, finishing on P1 with 78.1 points.
Very nice.
I mean, that's fantastic. You mentioned the lowest score. I think you said 4.25. Tell me now, is that mine? Because I'm sure that mine was just, my prediction for this race was just, I never trust practice. And I think that's my downfall, as well as sometimes my strength, because I always just recall back to 2020 when you know, Mercedes, and like Lewis always saying, oh, this problem, that problem. And then the race comes and then he's P1. So I think he's giving me like PTSD. So I don't trust practice, because I don't know if the driver is just trying to, you know, play a narrative, or if there's genuinely problems with the car.
Right.
Okay, well, it wasn't your score, but yours wasn't very far off from that, unfortunately. it was a player from the Dominican Republic, Calvin Javier, who scored only 4.25 points. But
it's just
we're
not
get to
it's
your
just
score
not my season.
Later
like
on,
I
Chelsea.
Mentioned to you earlier, Anton, it's just not my season.
But in general, the scores weren't very high. And with the highest score also being 78.1, nobody's really getting on the high score pages, not worldwide, but also not in the different continents. So looking at the different continents and looking at the different countries, Sam, as I usually ask you, which country had the most players in Forecast F1 for this race in Vegas? What do you think?
I'm going to stick with the same country that I have for several podcast episodes, and I'm going to go with Kenya.
You're right. So Kenya had 66 players this weekend. I'm going to ask you also to guess the other two countries on P2 and P3.
I'm going to go with Lebanon. Lebanon, and I'm going to go with Argentina. Argentina P2, Lebanon P3.
Oh, nice. You got it right. Okay. You're on nice form too this weekend. So it's going to be interesting later on the quiz. But so it was Kenya with 66 players, Argentina with 59, and Lebanon with 57. Any guesses from your side on how our respective countries, how many people we had playing from there? So Canada, South Africa, the Netherlands?
I'm not confident in my choice, so I like, in terms of what I picked, I don't know for Canada how many would have played. I'm gonna say in terms of players, the amount of players, maybe 30. I'm gonna say in the 30s, 34.
Okay, so Canada had 20 players, which was the 16th most players from a country. The Netherlands had 41, being on P6, and South Africa had 18 players this weekend, being on the shared.
Oh, I was gonna guess 19. I was gonna guess 19.
Oh, that would have been close.
should have left it for you to guess. Well, anyway,
should have.
But, Yeah. Well, looking at the accumulated scores for other countries, Kenya moves up one place to P6, Mexico drops one place to P8, and Zambia is overtaking Belgium for P17. And again, North Mariana being the country with the most places gained, they gained five places, moving to P120. We have, if I'm not mistaken, we have 100 players from 149 different countries in the game this season. So
unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. It is quite.
It's
a lot.
Pretty incredible too, because for the three of us on this episode, we were just talking at the very beginning about how, like for Chelsea and I, we started playing the game when there was just a roughly 200 people back in 2022, and now we are talking about how many countries are actually playing the game. So it's really, really great to kind of always do a check back and see the growth itself and how many people play the game and are able to enjoy it.
Yeah, there's now almost more players from the amount of different countries is almost higher than the amount of players that we had at the beginning when we all started. But yeah, you're right. So I would like to highlight the player that is winning the $10 voucher from the DRS Lane shop in Beirut. So the highest Lebanese player, I had to scroll down a little bit this time, but what is interesting is that the person that wins has the same first name as the winner of the race. So it's George Basil who gets that voucher. He finished P38. No, sorry, I'm wrong there. That's another George. I'm trying to find, because I didn't write down what the final. Well, anyway, he scored 53 points. That's what I did write down, and he finished on P34. Sorry. So yeah, he's winning the voucher, and congratulations to that. And
congratulations, George.
Congratulations.
That means we have a look at the worldwide competition. And Sam, I think what you're most eager to learn is whether you're still in the podium. And I'm afraid to say that you're no longer, because you scored 22.6 points. So you're dropping from P2
Ouch.
To P4, unfortunately.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a rough result. That's a very rough result. But you know what? That's fine. I accept my loss. I definitely came to terms with that before you told me. So
yeah. So we had.
Interesting. It's interesting to hear that Sam is P4. Like, to me, that's like worldly. I'm down. What was my number? 216.
I think you were in 232.
And now it'll be even worse.
Yeah. that's actually true. yeah, and it's a bit of a shame, Sam. You were not here to celebrate your P2 and once you get back on, you're dropping places. But again, I completely agree with Chelsea. It's amazing you're at P4 to begin with. I mean, most of us can only dream of positions like that. So still well done for the overall season, and you know, there's still two races left, one of them being a sprint race, so it's mm-hmm. not been said that you're not going to finish on the podium. You definitely can. Actually, I'm rooting for you to win it, but there's a few points to be scored still. So the current P1, Rosario Vinci from France, scored only 21 points, so that's not a whole lot. The player who was P3 previously, Joseph Morgan from the United Kingdom, scored 32.1 points. So he's moving up to P2, and he's closing the gap a little bit towards Rosario. Rosario now has 1,038 points, and Joseph Morgan has 1,023.4. So there's a gap of 14.6 points. And on P4... we have Marina Minlu from China. She actually moved up from P10 to P3. So that's a good amount of places gained for her.
Yeah.
And actually, we now have up until player that's in P11 has crossed the 1,000 point mark. So that's also pretty exciting. But yeah, Sam, do you remember how you end up getting scoring those points? What was your podium? What did you predict?
Well, I believe I went for a McLaren win, and I believe I went Hamilton Verstappen, if my memory serves me well.
Yeah, you did go with the McLaren win. You had Norris on P1. You had Verstappen on P2 and had Hamilton on P3. You should have done that the other way around. You
just a little switch.
A few more points for Hamilton. Yeah, unfortunately. So, yeah, with the 22.6 points, you finished P661. And, yeah, like I was saying previously, that's still slightly better than Chelsea. Chelsea, do you remember your
slightly,
you
just
remember
just
your
a little
podium?
Bit, Sam. I'm getting you.
I'm not trying to sprinkle salt in your wound.
Obviously,
but,
do you
remember
my
what
podium.
You're,
of course, Max in P1. And then for P2, it would have been Leclerc or Norris. And then for P3, it would have been... Oh. I want to again, like, depending on where I put Leclerc and where I put Norris, that's where the two would have been sitting.
Yeah,
if I'm correct.
You're yes. correct. That was, you went with Verstappen and Leclerc.
Max
and Norris.
Always P1. I was saying to Anson, the one race I didn't put Max in P1 was the Brazilian race, because the whole season I've been keeping him in P1. I think there was one other race where I didn't do it, and then for the Brazilian race I was like, I don't know, he's not getting P1, I need to get points, let me just put somebody else in P1, and then Max comes through. So I don't know, must I just not put him in P1 and then he'll win races? Like, what's my luck here?
Yeah, well, I agree with you, it's it's very tough to make those picks, and I'm somewhat in a similar spot to whether putting Verstappen on P1, yes or no. But yeah, overall in the end you only scored 8.75 points, so yeah, that is it's a bit of a wrong timing to invite you for this podcast.
I'm very close.
This is your, yeah, it's your lowest score this season, actually. You scored
earlier in the season.
Yeah, you had 10.3 points in Baku, which was also pretty low, but
earlier in the season, Sam actually posted in our WhatsApp group. She was like, Chelsea's on P3. And I was like, whoa, theory, this is my season. I'm going to do so well. And then it just went downhill from there.
Well, just to give you something positive, I mean, your highest score was actually pretty good. That was in China. You scored 73.3. Sam, do you remember what your highest score this season was?
New. I do not remember,
early,
but I know you have it written. Yeah, exactly. But you have it written down there. So why don't you tell me?
Well, I thought it was pretty funny, because actually your highest score this season was the very first race of the season, was in Bahrain. You scored 76.3. So I thought that was interesting, that out of all races, the very first one is where you scored the highest.
Not too bad, not too bad. 76, and then all of a sudden 22 this time around. So, but no, I'll still be happy overall with the season so far. We still have two races, so you never know where ultimately you'll end up. But it's not too shabby this season, that's for sure.
It's interesting how you both had Verstappen on P2 and P1 respectively. I had him on P5, which is actually where he finished. I also had Sainz on P3, which is where he finished. I went with the Leclerc window and the P2 for Norris. I didn't score that many points. I scored 29.5, having me finish on P418. And actually, I didn't mention Chelsea. With this score, yeah, you're indeed moving down from P3. 232 to P269. That's a tough one to take. Do you remember where you finished last season?
It was hundreds. I was like 118, somewhere there.
Yeah, 117.
I hope.
107. Yes.
Woo.
Yes, 117. So yeah. Well, anyway, I'm moving from P29 to P26. So Sam, it's still two races, but I'm still coming for you. So get ready for that big points haul I'm gonna make in Qatar with the sprint weekend.
You keep telling yourself that. Yeah, we'll wait, we'll see it to believe it.
All right, well, that means that we have nothing else left to do but to play the quiz for this weekend. And since Chelsea, you predicted that three people had a correct podium, Sam went with five, the correct answer was one. That means that you can actually choose whether you go first in the quiz or whether you let Sam go first with predicting how many people correctly predicted Russell on P1 out of 1,074 players. So it's up to you. Who's going to go first?
Oh, I really don't mind. Sam, do you want to go first?
Sure.
Yeah, then please, okay. By all means.
Well, then, if we're going Russell P1, I am going to say 16 people.
All right. Is it my turn? Or do we do the whole list and then...
No, it's your turn now.
My turn? Okay, so Russell, I'd say it's a little bit higher. I know that he does have a little bit of a following, and like you said, practice was... they were showing great strength. So I would say about 100.
Ooh, it's indeed more than the 16 that Sam went with, but you're just slightly overdoing it. It was 41 people. So that's a first point for
okay.
Sam.
Okay, overshots, all right.
Good start for you though, Sam. And Chelsea, that means you can go ahead with guessing how many people then went with a P2 for Lewis Hamilton.
Well, then I'm going to go close to 40. I'm going to say 40.
Okay, I am going to go with 35.
All right. Well, that means that you both got a point now, because that was actually quite a little bit more. It was still 163 people that went with Hamilton P2.
So there's the 100.
Yeah, there's the 100. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that means we move on to the first Ferrari finish, which was on P3 for Carlos Sainz. Sam?
I'm going to go with 20. I'm going to go with 20.
I'm going to go a bit higher than that, because, you know, we have seen Ferrari finish, you know, top three quite regularly this season. So I'm going to say 70.
Yeah, you're scared to overshoot it again, right? But this time you could have.
I wanted to say 130. That's what I wanted to say.
Really? Well, 130 is the right answer. So.
I wanted to say 130.
Really?
Well,
130, yes. 130 is the right answer.
Yeah, that's the right answer. Yeah. Okay. Trust the gut.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, anyway, with 70, you still get the point.
Well, perfect. Yeah.
means it's up to you to say how many people you think had Leclerc on P4.
Again, that's sort of been their ground. So I'm going to say, I don't know if I should play it safe or do what I want to say. I want to say 150.
Okay. All right, I've written that down for you, Sam.
I'm going to go a little bit higher. I'm going to say 165.
Well, the 150 was going to be very difficult to beat anyway, because it's very close to the right answer. It was 147.
Wow. Chelsea, not a bad one.
Well,
you're
there we go.
You're making a good start, but it's not done yet. We go to Verstappen on P5.
No, there's still...
Verstappen P5, I'm going to say 42.
You know, it's difficult because in my mind, everybody should just be voting Verstappen P1. So I want to assume that, you know, a lot of people got this wrong, but I'm going to go higher than Sam, and I'm going to say 90.
You're good at this game, Chelsea. It was 130. Woo! Again, same answer as with
wow.
Sainz. So that means you're 4-1. Sam, you got some ground to make up. And
I do.
But it's actually Chelsea who goes first on the Norse prediction for P6. How many people put the McLaren driver there?
Okay, so that's sort of been
Wait,
you know they've had
actually,
some strong.
Is it actually, yeah, it is. Sorry, it is you.
okay, so, you know, obviously McLaren's have some strong races this season, but they've also sort of been in the middle ground for majority of the season. So I'm going to say a higher number. I'm going to say 170.
Okay, I'm going to go lower. I'm going to say 65.
That's nice. You're making up 1 point, because it was 31. So the 65 is close.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
It's 2-4, and we move to the other McLaren driver, Piastri on P7. Sam,
I'm gonna say 87.
See, I want to say a high number, but I don't. Oh, Piastri in P7.
Tough
Let's
one, eh?
Let me just go above. Let's say 110.
That's the right direction to move towards. I was actually surprised to see that with Norris on P6, only 31 people went with that. There was 232 that went with Piastri on P7.
Wow,
Ooh,
that is
I
a
wanted
large
to
number.
Say 260, so there we go.
That would have
okay.
been close, indeed, yes. So we then go to Hülkenberg on P8. I had him on P9 myself, but he finished on P8. How many people, Chelsea, went with that?
So, I mean, Haas has been having a fantastic season for themselves, you know, getting all the points and moving up in the constructors. I'm going to say, you know, he's bottom three material, so P8, P9, P10. So it's just hard to say where exactly people would have placed him. I'm going to say 150.
Okay. I am going to go in the opposite direction and go low. I'm going to say 4.
Well, it's fewer than 150. That's definitely true. But you went far too low, Sam. So you're giving away points. It was 97. So
oh my gosh,
that's closer to Chelsea's guess. Only 53 away, and Sam, for you, 93 away. So point goes to Chelsea. Means we're 6-2. Means it's already done.
I can't come back. Yep.
We're still, yeah. So that means I'm going to ask you, Sam, how many people put Tsunoda on P9?
Well, considering there were so many people for Hülkenberg, I'm going to go higher than I would have. And I'm going to say 82.
Okay. I'm going to go even higher than that. I'm going to say 140.
All right. Well, that's another point for Sam, because it was pretty close to your 82.
Okay.
It was 22 people fewer than that. So 60 people who went with Tsunoda on P9.
60.
Okay.
Then we go
Perez?
To Perez, exactly, yeah. On P10. That one's for you, Chelsea.
Now, see, Perez has been doing so bad this season. I mean, people don't assume he's going to finish top 10. So now, did everybody assume he was going to finish P10, or did nobody assume?
Where did you have him yourself?
I had him P... I don't think I had him, actually, in the top 10. Did I?
Well, the good thing is that we can check those things. So you had him... Yeah, you actually did. You had him on P8.
P8, okay.
So did I, actually. Sam, where did you have Perez?
I believe I had him around P8. That's typically where I put him.
Yeah, you did too. Yeah, we all had him on P8.
Yeah.
Okay, then my number's going to be low. I'm going to say 12.
Okay. I'm going to go a little higher. I'm going to say 33.
All right. Well, I with this, I perhaps kind of fooled the both of you a little bit. It was still a pretty good amount of people that went with him on P10. It was 104, so that's... That's a point for Sam, and that means we're only stuck with the fastest lap, which, as we already mentioned, Norris took by pitting for soft tires. Actually, Ocon pitted also a few laps before the end of the race for soft tires, but it was Norris that took the point. How many people went with that in their prediction, Sam?
I'm going to go with 48.
I'm going to go a bit high. I'm going to go with 90.
Yeah, it was even far more than that. It was 345 people that went with that.
Wow, okay. We were way off.
Means that for the second time in a row, we're going to listen to the South African anthem in the outro of this podcast. So congratulations to you, Chelsea.
Yeah, very nice.
I love that. Thank you, thank you.
Well, deservedly so. And but before we do that, I would like to hear from you. Well, we only have 1 week to go until we go to the race in Qatar. And as we mentioned, it's a sprint weekend. So that means not only that we get to score more points, it also means that we need to predict blindly. And I know some of you are a fan of the idea and some are definitely not. But yeah, it means there's a lot of point up for grabs. And well, what we've been repeating throughout the last episodes of the podcast is that nobody knows who's going to win in the next weekend. So I don't know, how are you going to, Chelsea, how are you going to make a decision on who you're putting on P1? Because I guess it's going to be the same thought process.
Yes,
again.
It's very
again.
Simple. It's very, very simple. Max Verstappen.
What about you, Sam?
My most concerning thing, or priority I should say, is going to be not to overthink it, because now that I am in P4, I feel like, you know, I don't want to get in a situation where I start overthinking my predictions.
Yes.
In order to try, you know, in the hopes of trying to get further ahead. I think that normally when I just kind of go with my gut, it seems to, for the most part, work out. Sometimes not so much, but we'll see.
I wanted to ask you, how did you, what was your mental thought process leading up to picking Sainz to win the Mexican Grand Prix? Because you got that one right. I want to know how you did that.
Yeah.
Did you drink? what'd you do?
You know what? I honestly, I went with my gut, and that's truly what I did. I felt like it was going to be, I just felt like it was going to be a race that was that anything was going to happen, and for some reason I just believed that Sainz would win, and obviously it was the right guess. So that's why I say, like, going with my instinct as opposed to overthinking it usually has been working out in my favor. And I mean, this has been a season where, I mean, previous to this last season, it was really easy to pick P1 because Verstappen was so dominant. But this season, it's really opened up the floor a lot more for being able to make picks like that and seeing yourself jump, or maybe not necessarily, but see everybody kind of move around on the player board, so to speak, because yeah, you never know. You never know who ultimately is going to win, but at least that weekend it played in my favor. We'll see about Qatar, though.
It's an interesting one because I think Piastri won the sprint weekend last year over there, so I guess it's a track that he likes too, and I think that the McLarens might be, this track in Qatar might be quite well suited for them. So it's going to be an interesting one. I'm probably pretty much on the other side of the spectrum, the overthinking side of it. But yeah, as we've seen, that historically doesn't get you more points. I mean, you're still far ahead of me than, and yeah, so I you know, I'll just stick to myself and, I don't know, maybe try to go with my gut one time too and see what happens. But at least we don't need to wait very long before we get to predict again. And actually, yeah, it's a triple header. So not only Qatar is following up pretty quickly, but after that we're going to have Abu Dhabi too. So interesting to see what will happen. And hopefully, Sam, you can still challenge for that Forecast F1 season win. So fingers crossed for you.
That's a goal. Yeah, that is the goal.
I'm also thinking that maybe before I do my predictions, I must just give Sam a message and just see, like, hey girl, what's your predictions for today?
Yeah, no pressure.
Yeah, that's like, I have too much pride to do that, but I should be doing that very same thing too.
Anton and I are very competitive.
She's got good instincts, so I mean, her gut feeling has been right quite a lot this season. So yeah.
Anton is just itching in his seat right now as he hears this, and my smile is so big because we're quite competitive. And the funny thing is that, you know, typically, for, I would say more often than not, we actually tend to predict the same, and we don't talk about it before, but our mindset in terms of placements are usually very much similar. So even for this season, for a large part of this season, we've been trending pretty much neck and neck, right? And so yeah, it's interesting to see, but you can call me at any time, Chelsea, and I don't know if I'll be on the money with the predictions, but I'll do my best.
I mean, it's interesting that you say that your predictions have been similar, because I mean, Anson's just said that he tries to, you know, look at the data and tries to, you know, have an educated guess, where you're just like, who do I feel is going to mm-hmm. be in this position? And that's what you go with. So it's so interesting to see how the two are actually quite aligned, and just how like on par your gut feeling is.
Yeah, I normally, it's interesting because I normally avoid taking the, I'll take a bit of the data that comes out of the practice sessions, but I find that, you know, you can have a general sense with the with that, but overall, I mean, this season has reflected that it doesn't necessarily translate into the outcome of the race. So I try not to let that overwhelmingly influence my decision, where last year I did. And then ultimately, I find that, yeah, like sometimes you also feel like some drivers just are, there's a momentum behind them. And I think even going back to Sainz, like that decision, I just felt like that weekend, he just seemed to really be on point. And typically, if you take that into account with certain drivers, Sainz being one of them, sometimes when he is just, when he has momentum going into a weekend, he seems to perform really, really well. And yeah, we've seen that before. My favorite weekend to always make a prediction is usually during the Canadian Grand Prix, because I'm able to actually physically be there. So you can kind of see, yes, you're seeing the practice sessions, but again, I'm not relying so much on the data as I am just seeing where everything is, the momentum, and then kind of making a guess from there. So it's fun though. It's always fun.
And it's also difficult to interpret the data, because, you know, the same happened this weekend where we could see in free practice one and two that Mercedes was quick, but I was thinking that it was just going to be one of these days where, yeah, they're quick on quali runs, but in the race pace, they're going to lose out dramatically. And I thought that, that wasn't going to be really a signal for the Mercedes ending that high up the ranking. So I put them in P6 and P7. And at the same time, I was thinking that, yeah, you know, Verstappen looked very slow, but, you know, even though Helmut Marko saying that they're not able to bring in another wing, I thought that they will probably find somewhat of a solution for it going into FP3 and going into qualifying. So, you know, you get some data, but you still need to work with that and interpret it and think what actually makes sense and what doesn't. I mean, all in all, I think in those first two practice sessions, the McLarens didn't look bad on race pace at all. And they end up finishing, you know, not too high. So it's even though you get some data, you never get the full picture. You're still left to play with it, and it's
anything can happen.
It's frustrating. Yeah, and
it takes one driver to turn left while the rest are turning right, and I mean there are five drivers out. Like speaking just of, you know, that situation with Max a couple of races back, where him and Norris made up in a little bit of a headbang.
Right.
And it's just changed the entire outcome. So you never know, no matter how much you try to make it make sense, anything could happen once the race starts.
And that's also the interesting thing about the sprint weekends, because I actually get quite a bit of, I don't know how to put it, perhaps like criticism on having to predict before we get to see any free practice sessions, which I do understand because you don't have any data. But on the other hand, for me, it sort of feels like a little bit of liberating feeling that I don't have any data to really frustrate myself with. And it's just, you know, going with whatever you think. So I guess the Qatar weekend is going to be one of those where we don't have any data to analyze. It's just, who do you think is going to be quick? Which driver do you think is good? And just, you know, fill out your predictions, go with your gut and see where you end up.
Yeah, exactly.
So I guess it should be one of your strong weekends, Sam, going with your gut. But
we'll see.
We'll review after the Qatar Grand Prix. For this one, Chelsea, thank you very much for coming on. I think we ought to invite you another time so that Sam can have a rematch at the quiz, because you were very competitive there.
Absolutely.
So I'm sure we'll have you on another time. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me. It was lovely just chatting F1 with you guys. Thank you. And Sam, it's been so lovely chatting to you too.
Yes, absolutely. It's been a pleasure, Chelsea. Like I said before, it's really great to have you on. You've been a part of Forecast F1 for so long, and it's great to hear your thoughts.
Thanks, guys, for having me.
Alrighty. Well, thank you. And I think it's already getting pretty late over there. It's 11:45.
Yes, it is.
Yes, that's very.
It's actually one of my downfalls of moving here to Malaysia, is because in South Africa I was sort of in a sweet spot. I was like in between like all the different grids on in the world, so I didn't have any like outrageous. I think maybe two races a season would be like, okay, I can't watch it, I have to watch it the next day. But now that I've moved to Malaysia, there are so many races that are like 3 a.m., 1 a.m., 2 a.m. And I'm just like, oh, Why? That when I went rough. To the Singapore Grand Prix, I was like, yes, finally, a Grand Prix in my time zone, a Grand Prix in my backyard. Like, this is it. My enjoyment in the sense of just, you know, being able to just watch races live has definitely decreased since coming to Malaysia.
Well, I did 7 years in Southeast Asia, so I know exactly how you feel. That's all I can say. It's a bit of a bummer. And also, you're saying that, yeah, South Africa's right in the middle. You're right. But actually, what's good about our time zone is that most of the races are like super early. They're like 8 or 9 in the morning, which means, you know, you watch the race and you still have the rest of your day left. And I know that the races that are in the afternoon of the daytime, it's even that even bothers me because I have like the whole day going towards it and I'm like nervous for the race.
Really?
And that's the that's the good thing about it, having it 8 o'clock in the morning. It's like you wake
up in South Africa. No, in South Africa it would usually be at 3 p.m. a 2 p.m. or 3 p.m. race.
Yeah, but then you still need to wait the whole morning.
I mean, and I suppose that was my like my upbringing. But that was, I think that was my upbringing. Like, you'd enjoy your Sunday, you'd maybe like go swim, go do your shopping, do whatever you need to do on your Sunday morning. And then you end your whole weekend off with F1. Yeah, and for me used to be an enjoyment. But again, I think it's because that's how I was raised, opposed to you starting it in the morning. And that's what you're used to.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, but it also has to do with, you know, having to still record a podcast and do the scores and all that. So if it's like late in the afternoon and then if the FIA can't make their mind up and then it's like
you've
it's
got
late
deadlines.
Evening.
Yep.
Yeah. Like now I have a birthday party in the evening, which I can actually attend to because I'll be done with doing everything. But anyway, I mean, it's both. I mean, as long as we have F1 races, you won't hear me complaining. Whatever the time they may be.
Complaining. And just to end this off on a strong note, I know this is what's actually started my whole like journey of F1 online, was that there was a talk that, you know, maybe F1 will be coming to South Africa. But now
still
the whispers are getting a bit louder. I'm really hoping for that 2027... Come back to Kyalami. Let's have you there. I'm really, really hoping that this isn't just, you know, another rumor. I really hope that this is something that's getting locked in and that they're going to fix up the track and they're going to make it A1, I think it needs to be able to classify for Formula One. I really hope. I can say, as somebody who's been to the track, they need to have some serious infrastructure just on, you know, the fans, because their seating, their car parking, I mean, that's just going to be a nightmare if they have to try and host Formula One. So I see the logistic nightmare that they probably have to face, but I really hope that they go through it because I really, really want F1 back in Africa, back in South Africa.
That would be amazing. I completely agree with you. It's funny because I was just having this conversation yesterday with a friend of mine, also who has been a guest on this podcast, Ajit, and also originally from Malaysia too, ironically enough. But we were talking about if we were to get rid of one track that's on the current calendar, and what would be the track that you would get rid of, and what it's so funny because that's exactly what I said too. But anyways, that was my immediate knee-jerk reaction, and clearly Anton's as well. But what would be the one track you would remove, and what would be the track that you would add? And you know, both of us said South Africa would be one of the top three that we would consider adding because, yeah, it would be really great
Malaysia's back. Malaysia's
and Malaysia
coming
was
back.
Another one, Sepan. Yeah, yes, we were talking
but they're,
about
they're
that
they're already
as well.
Back. that's happening. My knee-jerk reaction, funny enough, was actually Monaco. And I know that Monaco is like, obviously, you know, F1, they go hand in hand. But that was my knee-jerk. When you said Miami, then obviously like my brain was like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. But my knee-jerk, my first thought was actually, I wouldn't mind seeing Monaco go and Africa, you know, South Africa being the one to replace it. Mm-hmm. However, I do not wish for it to go to Cape Town. I really, really wanted to stay in Johannesburg. I wanted to be back at Kyalami Racetrack. I really, really want to see it. And I know that if you have any Cape Townians listening to this, they're going to come for me. But I want it back in Johannesburg.
Yeah, no, and I would also say for me, South Africa would be top one on the list to have back on the calendar. Mm-hmm. But there are so many other great countries where we could race. I mean, Istanbul, we would have Portimao, Sepang, and you know, they build a whole circuit in Vietnam that we never used. I would just say we should go back to having only one race per country and skip Miami completely. Austin and Las Vegas should be a rotation system. We should rotate the two Italian tracks as well to have only one of them on the car. I just think it would be fair to say that, you know, why would you have more than one race per year in a country? I understand that motorsport history is very big in Italy, and just as the people from Cape Town are going to come for you, the Italians might come from you. Again, we're pretty far away from each one of those, you know, I think we can speak our minds.
I could speak on this all day. Just in the sense, the reason I mentioned Cape Town is because they had the Formula E there in Cape Town, and it just gave me this horrible feeling that, oh no, they're trying to see how it works for them in Formula E as like a trial run for Formula One, and they're testing it in Cape Town. So I just felt like, oh, they're ripping it away from me in Johannesburg. But just on Las Vegas, I mean, I obviously read the news and see the articles. I mean, the people aren't happy, you know, with the race being in Las Vegas, the locals. And I heard that this year was their worst year of sales. I mean, year two of it being being on the grid. So I actually, I wouldn't, again, don't hate me. Let's drop Las Vegas and let's put South Africa.
Oh, yeah. we impulsively were talking about, because the prices had dropped so significantly for Vegas, you know, I had mentioned to him that I was almost impulsively going to buy a ticket. And Anton, you had said that it crossed your mind as well.
Definitely.
Just going to randomly go out there. because the tickets, I mean, I remember when they were last year, it was astronomical. And even at the start of this year, it was as well. But it dropped so significantly, like, less than 3-4 weeks before the race itself, that you can't help but wonder if clearly the ticket sales and maybe the location itself played a factor. I completely agree with both of you in this, and I also have to chuckle a little bit with just how quick you were to say that, Anton, about Miami, because both Anton and I are not. Clearly, we're very vocal about how we feel about
Miami. No, definitely.
I think more than anything, the part that, I mean, going back, completely agree with you, Anton, on the fact that it would make more sense to have, instead of multiple races in the same country, you know, be able to diversify the landscape itself and have it in places would also embrace like locations in other areas and for fans as well of the sport. South Africa is a huge one, but more so than anything, I think for Miami itself, the main reason is I really there's two. One would be I'm not a big fan of the spectacle of it over that weekend. I feel like, at least in the last,
with their fake pool, you don't like their painting.
And that was
of
my
pool?
Second. That was my second. Definitely, I really, like, if anything, that's top of the list. Every time they do an aerial of the track, I can't look at the boats.
They put so much effort into painting that pool. I mean, come on, give credit where credit is due. That is a beautiful mural of a pool like scenery. It's stunning.
It's
yeah,
baffling.
For me, the pool is
me.
One of the highlights of Miami. That says enough.
Oh yeah,
touche. Well, guys, I think that pretty much wraps it up, doesn't it? We look ahead to Qatar, and again, it's been a pleasure, Chelsea, to have you on.
Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure to be here and to share my thoughts and opinions on F1. I would thank you so much for having me.